NZ Aero Sports, Icarus Canopies, now Gyro. That's right, we've rebranded, and Gyro is our next generation. It honours our founder, as that's the name we knew him by, but Gyro also marks the start of a new chapter. And not to be biased, but it's going to be fucking epic. Long story short, we're more us than ever. So if you're new to the sport, or even a Sky God Ninja Turtle, welcome. I think our valiant leader Lucy, Gyro's daughter, says it best.
And we still got that fuck yeah attitude. Rebrand, woo!
Rebrand, woo indeed, Lucy. Anyway, head over to gyro.com for more info and get amongst your legends.
I was 19, broke, unemployed, and sold my girlfriend's canopy for drug money. So I thought I better sew her a new one. What a sentence and what a story. This describes the humble yet outrageous beginnings of NZ Aerosports, the home of Icarus Canopies, in the words of our founder himself. From getting a paratrooper toy from his mom, watching parachutes at the DZ as a six-year-old, jumping off the wharf with a parachute made from bedsheets, doing his first jump at 16, sewing his first canopy on a borrowed machine at 19, and starting to sell parachutes out of a garage in 1986, Paul Gyro Martin had an undying love for the sky. Our company started with one man with the wildest of spirits in a true blue sky dream, a renegade. In the time that Gyro created and ran the Icarus Canopies brand until he passed away in 2017, he pushed everything he had to its limits. We miss him and we always will. Gyro is the next generation of NZ Aerosports. It honors our founder, of course, because it was the name we all knew him by, but Gyro the rebrand also marks the start of a new chapter, our next jump. Gyro is the space between sound and silence, art and science, chaos and calm. Gyro is a state of epic tranquility that transcends understanding. That moment, in the door, in free fall, mid-swoop, where nothing but the present exists. A perfect balance of euphoria and thrill. Gyro captures our passion for flying and our commitment to designing break-the-fucking-rules canopies that deliver pilots pure, wild flight.
Hey gang, so I got a new book out. It's called The Upside of Fear, and it's exactly what you think it's about. It's about the good side of, well, getting scared. In it, we talk not only about the science and biology behind fear, but the psychology as well. And it's not just coming from me, it's coming from some of the best in the sport. Omar Al-Hijalon, Jeff Provenzano, Maxine Tate, and so many more have contributed their sometimes terrifying stories to the book to help you overcome your fear. So head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com. You're going to find the link to the book there, as well as the other books. It's available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook right now.
Coming straight from the cockpit, it's another episode of Lunatic Fringe with the fucking pilot.
Ready, set, go! Back in the can with another edition of the Lunatic Fringe Podcast and someone that's hitting a soft spot in my heart with what they've got going on. Please tell me, who the fuck are you and what do you do?
My name's Tom and I just recently started sky surfing and I'm also a chef on the side. So I'm kind of like a weekend warrior type deal. And yeah, that's what I do. Sky surfing, skydiving, weekend warrior type thing.
So a chef. So chefs have kind of over the last, what, dozen years or so gotten this bad boy reputation. So are is it that? Are you mixing up the bad boy chef reputation with skydiving?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of just fits in. I mean, a kitchen is a rough place. I mean, it's definitely an intense environment. I would say that's like where I actually started in anything extreme was being a chef, working with knives and fire and just like listening to Anthony Bourdain, and he was just the bad boy of cooking, and I just always loved the lifestyle of being a chef. And
so
skydiver definitely fits in that.
I'm gonna ask probably the most over asked question you've ever heard, followed up by a slightly more obscure one. The movie Burnt is one of my favorite movies.
Is it anything like that? People cussing and screaming and yelling and throwing plates. And do you like the movie Ratatouille?
I love the movie Ratatouille. And Burnt is one of the most accurate movies of being in a restaurant I've probably ever seen.
Is it really?
Yes, it's really intense. You hold this pressure over your head of like, you want excellence and perfection, yet while being like wild, and it's just a huge pressure. And yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So when did you start on that particular road?
I started as a dishwasher when I was like 15 years old. I was washing dishes and just worked my way up through the ranks. And it's pretty much the family business. My father owns a restaurant and just always been working in restaurants and stuff like that.
Did being able to handle a high pressure environment like that of a restaurant, and especially working up towards being a chef, do you think that prepared you for the pressures of doing something like jumping out of an airplane?
Yeah, absolutely. Just being able to like stay focused and calm under pressure is like all kitchen work. So you have to be able to, when things start getting hot in the kitchen, you got to be able to deal with it.
Sure.
And it's once you start service, it's kind of like once you jump out of an airplane and it's no way through it but till the end, you know, that's it.
I mean, I suppose I, like a lot of people, like the romantic idea of working as a chef. But if practically it really is like that portrayal of being a chef, I fucking, there's no way.
Yeah, it's an intense environment for sure.
It's got to be. Now, you said your father owns a restaurant. Obviously, you work relatively closely with your family then. What did your family think when you started jumping out of airplanes?
Oh, the typical, you're crazy. Why do you want to do this? And it's just, yeah, my mom was actually really cool about it. It was my dad that was really the conservative side, which really surprised me. My mom was like, go for it. It's cool that you're living out your dream and doing what you want to do. And my dad was like, you're fucking crazy. And I have no idea why you want to keep doing this. And when I keep telling him my jump numbers were going up, and he's just like, dude, you're insane.
Sure, sure. Now, how'd that first jump come about and when?
So yeah, I did a tandem. That was my first jump, and probably about close to 3 years ago. And so I did like a 1 year break in between my first tandem and actually taking AFF. My buddy, he's like signed us up for the tandem, and he ended up not showing up. And I showed up to the drop zone, and I was like, well, I'm going to go ahead and go through with this. I prepared a lot. I used to be like really overweight, and I lost a bunch of weight just so I can skydive.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, yeah. So it was like a huge goal of mine to work through all this, getting this weight down just to get fit enough to be able to skydive. And so it was a huge goal, and I went through with it and jumped out. And I knew from that moment, I was like, this is it. Like, this is awesome. I want to keep doing this. Like watching the camera flyer fly in front of me with all his cool camera and his sit wing suit sitting in front of me, shredding around me. And I was just like, dude, that's the coolest thing ever. I want to be that dude.
That's awesome. Now, actually, yeah. Just a quick sidebar. The life of someone working in a kitchen all the time, is carrying the extra weight just a hazard of the trade?
Yeah, I mean, you have to taste everything. You kind of like got to go through with it. And a lot of it's just self-discipline, not, you know, wanting to shove everything in your face that you see.
I mean, it's got to be hard to fight that, especially if that's what you do all the time. Because, I mean, every time I go into the kitchen to cook a full meal, I usually, by the time I make it to the dinner table, I'm fucking full.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and like, please go ahead. Go ahead.
Being a chef, you're eating all day. You barely ever eat dinner. It's kind of like one of those things. Like, your mom's always the last one to eat because she's in there tasting everything and snacking. So everyone eats first.
Now, I've actually had a few students over the years that have used skydiving as a great motivator for losing weight. And you did it. You cut weight just to be able to do that first tandem, or you knew beforehand that you wanted to try and continue on?
Well, I did it just so I could do that first tandem. And then after that, I was like, 100%, I have to stay in shape and be physical and active just so I can keep doing this for sure.
Now, what was that? Where was that first jump?
Z Hills, Skydive City.
Rough spot to start skydiving.
Yeah, it was definitely an intense wake up call. And but it's still my home, DZ. I love this place. It's everything I've ever wanted. It's like, literally, did I not know? Like, I was walking to the one of the best drop zones in the world. Like,
sure,
it's so awesome.
It's kind of funny though, right? When you're outside of the industry, you can literally have some of the best drop zones in the world are in places you would never think they'd be in. And I know so many people that have started skydiving near huge operations that before they made their first jump, never had a clue what was happening.
No, not at all. I didn't even know this was in my backyard. And this place is so full of so much history. And even listening to your podcast, I've learned some things about Skydive City that I had no idea about. So it was really cool to know.
Well, it's crazy because for as much history as there is in a place like that, skydiving is still a pretty young sport in the big scheme of things. So Skydive City is a place where you can literally go out and jump with other people's heroes and never know who they were.
Yeah, that's so true. We got world champions that jump here. We have Qatari skydiving team here right now, taking over the planes and doing what they do. And just, we got insta-famous skydivers here. We got a little bit of everything here. We got like some famous tandem instructors, and we have Bill Morrissey. It's just so much history here.
Yeah, well, you know, just before we started the podcast, you said Raymond Adams just strolled in the place, who, of course, yeah. I had on the show recently. Hell of a character.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a cool dude, and he actually has a big history with sky surfing. Him and Kibay have coordinated a lot of jumps together, and he takes a lot of Kibay's photos.
Sure,
which is really cool.
Now, being a newer skydiver, especially only having been in the sport for 3 years and starting at a drop zone like that, how accepting and how quickly did you get into the vibe there and into the community?
The community was super welcoming. It was just great. I love the community here. It's just a different vibe. It's like, I never walked into anything like this. It's like it's like a tribe. It's, you don't know what you're walking into, and then you walk into it, and then these people are like just as crazy as you are and just want to do the same things that you do. And that's what we all have in common. It's just this adventurous, crazy spirit.
Indeed. Well, you know, it was always kind of funny because there were always, in my opinion, there were two vibes that happened on the drop zone. There was the vibe for the tandem student that you knew may or may not ever see this place again. And then there was the much broader vibe that you showed to the AFF student, especially the one that was really starting to get into it. And they were both similar, but you never gave quite the whole picture to the tandem student until you saw that gleam in their eyes and you're like, oh, we got this one by the balls. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. I was going up on an AFF jump, and then I sat down with one of the instructors. I gave him a little squeeze on the knee. And then, you know, getting all comfortable in between people's legs, tucked in there like sardines. And he was like, yeah, this guy's one of us. And then I was like, I knew from there, this is what I'm going to do for sure.
So you said your dad was a little bit more on the conservative side when it came to jumping. But I mean, at what point did they realize, oh, shit, this is like something he does now?
Yeah. Basically, when I told him, I said, I'm not going to stop doing this. He goes, you're wasting all your money, blowing all your money. I was like, well, you're absolutely right about that, but doesn't mean I'm going to stop.
Sure. Now, doing something like skydiving, obviously it's pretty time intensive sport, but so is working as a chef. I mean, has there been any conflict of interest?
Oh, absolutely. man. So when you're working 5 days a week, it's really hard, especially when you're trying to pump out, you know, I'm trying to pump out at least 10 jumps a weekend easy. And so I only had 2 days off a week, and I was on every plane load I could possibly get on because I really wanted to get to jump 200. Everyone wants that camera on their helmet. Everyone wants to be able to take videos, and that's where it was at. And I just got pumped out, got to 200, put that camera on my helmet, and just started making videos and having fun. And
so pretty early on for you and your sport, you gave yourself direction, like you knew which way you wanted to go. Like, so what, through student status, you're like, oh, these are the guys that have got it figured out. This is the way I want to go.
Absolutely. I was sitting in the back of the plane with the noob suit and the Pro Tech helmet on with the analog altimeter. And I'm looking at the, the dudes in the front of the plane doing angles and wearing the cool suits with all the labels and the cameras and everything. I was like, I want to be those dudes. I was like, I want those dudes to be my friends. So I was like, that's all I wanted to go for.
Now, did you kind of just do it on your own, or did you try and seek out a mentor to try and aim you in the direction you needed to go with that kind of stuff?
Well, I just started kind of like free flying. I knew free flying was going to be a big deal when it came to sky surfing. So I kind of started free flying really early, which was really frowned upon. They were like, you shouldn't be free flying. You don't have enough jumps to do that. But in my head, I dove deep into skydiving, and I was like, well, back in the day, they didn't have tunnels, and they learned how to free fly without tunnels. I was like, they were earning it 45 seconds at a time. They didn't do all those types of things. They didn't have coaches. They didn't have YouTube videos. And I have all this at my disposal.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to send it anyway. Especially when I said I wanted to start sky surfing, everyone lost their minds. It was like a huge deal. Like they were like, are you going to die? They're like, are you trying to kill yourself? Are you like, I was like, no, I just want to do something rad. And I think it's super dope.
Sure.
So they're like, you know, nobody sky surfs anymore. It's like, well that's going to change.
It's the camera flying is kind of a natural transition for a lot of people. Obviously, they see that as a way to not just preserve their jumps and be able to give something cool for their friends to be able to do. But we live in a GoPro world now where, you know, everybody is thinking about video and thinking about the way that they want to frame and present the skydive. But sky surfing, on the other hand, has been off most people's radars for quite some time. I mean, you still have some of the niche sport leaders like Sean McCormick that are still out there doing it, but there's really not that many people strapping a board on their feet. So where did it come into your consciousness?
Well, I remember back in the, I'm a 90s kid, so I remember back in the 90s. I remember 90s sky surfing. I remember the old commercials and stuff like that.
The Troy Hartman geese commercial?
Yeah, I mean, that was a little bit before my time, but I still remember like being in like the third grade and having a sky surfing poster on the wall and was like, excel yourself. And it was just such a cool thing. And I was wondering, why is no one doing this? And so I just kind of started researching it, looking up videos. I was like, I'm really going to do this. And I listened to one of your podcasts, the Troy Hartman episode, and that just like sent it straight forward for me. I was like, even though he says he started sky surfing at 30 jumps, I was like, well, if Troy Hartman can do it, I can. I was like, that's not the right way to go about it, but I still like thought in my head, I was like, I'm gonna do it. Like, sure. This dude built his own board. He didn't go to a tunnel. He had 30 jumps. I'm like, I have over 200 jumps. I was like, I think I could probably do this.
You know, it's funny because, of course, I was around when Troy and Vic were just tearing it up and at the top of the game and had won X Games. And I was also of a generation where you could start doing things in skydiving kind of whenever you could get away with it, because there were no jump numbers for videos and you didn't have to have specific skills to do a lot of shit. You just had to prove to, you know, whoever was paying the bills that you could handle it. So you could get away with a lot of that kind of stuff. But nowadays there's so many restrictions to and training required to do so many things that it's a lot more difficult to be that way for sure.
Yeah. It's a 200 jump requirement, and I had to jump through so many hoops just to strap a board onto my feet. It was pretty insane. So like the night before I even found out who Kiwi was, I was in my camper hanging out, researching, like looking, I was zooming in on old photos of sky surfers, like looking at their bindings, like looking at their boards and like, how can I make this myself? And so the next day I go out onto the deck and I hear someone talking about a sky surfer, and I was like, oh, you know a sky surfer? He goes, yeah, his name's Kiwi. Boom, clicked. I was like, so I start searching who Kiwi is. And then come to find out, this guy makes boards. I was like, what? There's somebody out there that makes boards. So contact Kiwi. We start chit-chatting. I tell him I want to be a sky surfer. He asked me my jump numbers. I tell him my jump numbers. He goes, yeah, we can get you on a board. Boom, send Kiwi the money. I got a board. My drop zone definitely did not want me to jump a board here. They were like, no way. They were like, you need 300 jumps. They were like, you need 300 jumps. And I was like really upset about it. I was like, how can you put a 300 jump restriction on me if a wingsuit and sky surfing is both 200 jumps? So
right,
I kind of I kind of did like what I think. I kind of went to another drop zone and I jumped the board there and had somebody film me and did a couple jumps there and just sent it and was like, and it went great. It went fine. Was totally stable. Was great. And jumped my beginner board, came back and showed my drop zone the videos, and they were still kind of iffy about it. They didn't want me to do it. So I just kept going to the other drop zone on the other weekends. And finally, the drop zone I asked, I was like, come on, guys, let me fucking send the board here. I was like, let me jump the board out of my home DC. This is where I want to be jumping. I love this place. Let me do it. And they finally were like, send it. And it was a huge deal. It was awesome that they finally let me do it.
Now, what kind of research did you put into learning how to fly the board in the first place, considering there's nobody out there now to teach you?
Yeah. So Kibi actually put together a sky surfing manual. And it's the first one ever made that to my knowledge. And so he has like, it's kind of like AFF, Accelerated Freefall Program, but for sky surfing. It's like a 17 levels. You have to go through each one. The first one's just a belly. You just basically go on your belly, you do practice pulls, and you just hang out on your belly. Get used to feeling the board on your feet. And then you pull at 5 grand, kind of like a wingsuit. You pull super high just in case anything happens. And it went great. And I just kept jumping. And I have over 45 sky surf jumps now. And I just transitioned to the intermediate board like 2 weeks ago. I now have 4 jumps on the intermediate board. And it's going pretty well.
Nice. You know, it's funny because I was there for a couple of friends' transitions through larger boards, from smaller to larger boards. And my SkySurf partner and I, when we competed many, many moons ago, she actually did an incredible amount of flying on her board in the Las Vegas wind tunnel, which was not a strong enough wind tunnel to do much in, but she would wear an old sit suit that had the wings under the arms to give her an extra amount of lift so that she could stay up in the wind tunnel. And I would fly one of those massive balloon suits to do the video stuff. And that's actually how we transitioned into competing. But I also remember watching another good friend the first time he ever went from an intermediate board to a pro level Tom Stanton board, this massively long, you know, sky surf board. And I watched it work him for all he was fucking worth from exit to deployment. Man, oh man, that was some shit.
Yeah, that's definitely how I felt strapping on the intermediate board. I was like, oh, no problem, I'll get it. And then I had to do 3 flips into the stand to get it to my first time. I was like, there's a lot of underside bottom pressure on this board, man. I was like, oh, man. After the second flip, I was like, all right, breathe in deep, flip into it as hard as I possibly can, stomp that board down, and I made it mine. And I was like, all right, I'm on top of this board. I fucking did it. Now let's go.
Sure, sure. Well, and that's the thing, too, is a lot of it's attitude, right? Because I remember watching my buddy flying that Tom Stanton, and it was a composite, like an incredibly light board, just a recipe for holy shit, this could go really bad. You know, you're strapping a 6-foot propeller to the bottom of your feet that weighs less than your shoe. It can get interesting real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the whole point is just learning your proper positions, learning how to go to your belly and check the board, pull the board in, get into that scorpion position and learn how to control it before it takes you out for a spin. Sure. And that's basically where it's at, just knowing. And that's what we're doing. We're working on an inline manual as well to start transitioning people from the short board to the inline board as well. So as the progression happens, Kibi and I are working on like the manual together, kind of.
Nice. Now, as you go through this, are you keeping kind of a journal of your experiences? I mean, obviously, we've got our logbooks, you know, jump number, whatever. I did this, that, or the other. But are you keeping a detailed journal of this whole progression and what it's like?
I should be. No, I haven't started, but I'm going to start doing that. I'm doing myself an injustice by not doing that. And I know I need to start doing that for sure.
Well, I think it would also, even if it's just, you know, quick video recordings or audio recordings on your phone that you can then transpose, because it's also an awesome way for potential future sky surfers to learn, oh, this is what this guy had to go through. I'm prepared mentally that this might happen or that might happen, because, it's back to square one, kind of, just because there really aren't too many people out there doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to like re-pioneer skysurfing to be able to pass it forward, because it's kind of like I said, it's a tribe. And if the elder skydivers are not passing down this information, it will be lost.
Sure.
So I kind of feel like I found an elder sky surfer and he's like passing me down this knowledge and all this information that I can just hold on to and be able to pass and be able to train future sky surfers eventually when I am good enough and have enough confidence to be able to bring someone under my wing.
Sure. Now, as you get going on this and you transition to the bigger boards and your skills get more and more, where do you envision sky surfing going? I mean, is this just something that you're doing for pleasure, or do you think that it might have a place in the sport competition wise again, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, I definitely believe if we can get it fired back up, there will definitely be competitions. There'll be national competitions again. I think X Games, I mean, is getting pretty boring. I think people have seen enough skateboards and bicycles now. I think it's time to get extreme again. Hashtag X Games. Let's get extreme.
Sure. You know, I look back at sky surfing back in the day, and it got to an intense level of skill on the board, without a doubt. But it also got to a point where it was starting to test physical limitations. There was a move that Sean McCormick came up with called the Invisible Man that eventually, and I'm pretty sure I got the story right, but in order to pull off this move without physically causing himself harm, he was having to duct tape his arms because he was blowing out blood vessels in his arms. He was spinning so damn fast. So yeah, do you see it going that direction, or do you see it taking more of an artistic kind of angle?
I see it taking like angle flying. It's the huge thing right now. So I see sky surfing going into angle flying more than I see it going back into like the spins, the retro flying, the hen house surprise, these things, the crab walker and all these different moves. And I definitely see it like, as team sky surfing, basically, like, you know, have you have five angle flyers, you're going to have five sky surfers, or you're always going to have like Kibei is doing like leading angles, and you have angle flyers following the board leader and stuff like that. And so that's eventually where I want to take it for myself, is leading angles and doing angles with other people on the board. Because when you're doing the aerobatic movements of the spins and stuff like that, it's kind of lonely. It's just you and your camera guy, which, I mean, is also a lot of fun. It's
sure.
A lot less to worry about. You don't have to worry about five other people around you and what, you know, what you're going to pull at, what am I going to pull at? And are we all going to be able to stay safe together? So that's where I see it going, is a lot more angles.
I mean, how amazing would it be as canopies continue to progress with these insane speeds that these teeny little canopies can get going, and the XRW stuff that they've been able to do. If you were able to design a board that had a glide ratio big enough to be able to do something along those lines, would be mental.
That would be probably an 8-foot board. To slow you down enough to fly with a wingsuit or a canopy pilot.
Oh man, that would be something else. I mean, every time I have ever said, I don't think we're going to be able to progress much more as a sport because I've seen it all now. Every time I say that, fucking something new comes out and I'm just blown away.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy everything that people are doing. When, like, we have a lot of XRW happening here at Z Hills, and just watching those people do that's incredible. And yeah, there's so much respect for everyone that's doing everything that they're doing. It's incredible.
If you had told me 20 years ago that there'd be a time I'd see people in wingsuits doing the aerobatic stuff that they're doing, even just in a skydiving form, not even talking about any of the base jumping stuff that they do, but the free flying that they're doing in wingsuits now just blows me away. So I stopped saying I don't see this or that happening anymore, because I'm proven wrong every time.
Yeah. And when I tell people my vision of like have like 10 sky surfers in a V formation flying through the sky like a flock of birds, it's gonna, it like people are like, you're crazy. I'm like, no, I'm not. It's gonna happen. Watch.
Well, I mean, there were a lot of people that said the exact same thing about, you know, wingsuits and wingsuits flying with canopies and all the stuff that they've done with that. So again, I stopped saying I don't think that's gonna happen because again, every time I keep getting proven wrong.
Yeah.
It's so now, just, do you see other people seeing you on the board and kind of trying to revitalize that side of the sport? And have you had people approaching you to try and get on a board?
Yes, absolutely. That's been the craziest part about this. I'd never expected like people to like come up to me and ask me to teach them how to sky surf. I'm like, I was like, that's really kind of you, but I am not at the level to teach you to sky surf yet. I was like, I barely feel comfortable myself sky surfing.
Sure.
So it's. And people have reached out to me on Instagram and just like be like, oh, I didn't know people still sky surf. And like, yeah, I mean, here I am right here. We're doing it. It's coming back. I mean, get on the wagon while you still can, because sure. It's going to be dope.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because there's, again, this is still a young sport and you've still got people that pioneered sky surfing back in the day that are still vital parts of the sport that probably will love seeing, you know, a revamping of something they made so popular and what was like the only visible side of skydiving for the longest time to the general public. You know, I mean, now the general public sees wingsuit flying and they see canopy stuff. But back in the day, the only thing they saw for skydiving was sky surfing.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. Like when now you see students coming into the drop zone, be like, oh, I want a wingsuit. They're like got two jumps and they're like, I'm going to be a wingsuiter. Like, that's awesome. But that's because that's all they're seeing. And if you ask anybody, the only sky surfer they ever see is, like you said, Sean McCormick. They don't know, you know, Olive Fuhrer. They don't know Mary Tortomasi. They don't know Mike Frost. They don't know Troy Hartman. They don't know any of these names. A lot of these skydivers have no idea about skydiving history or anything. And it's just incredible that all these people are getting left in the past, which I think is terrible. It's crazy. They don't know.
You know, it's kind of funny because I bet you money someone like Troy or someone like Mary would love to be kind of back at the forefront of kind of giving a rebirth to sky surfing.
I mean, if they're willing to coach me and come down to Skydive City and jump with me, I'm here and willing to jump with them. Absolutely. So Troy Hartman, if you're listening to this, contact me. Let's go jump.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's one of the nicest guys in the world. If you listen to the podcast, you know, he's still so super excited and stoked for all the things that he was able to do and be a part of. It wouldn't shock me at all if you reached out to him and if nothing else had Zoom calls where he's giving you tips.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Frost has been super awesome. Kibe has been exceptionally awesome. They both reached out to me and they're coaching me all the time and they tell me exactly what the fuck I'm doing wrong and how I'm fucking up, which is great.
Now,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, as you get started and as you've been learning, have there been any scary situations? Any time when you're like, oh fuck, man, this is a lot more than I expected.
Honestly, just on my first jump on the board, my first one ever on the beginner board, a little piece broke on my board and I was like, you know what, fuck it, I'm just gonna tie this piece to this piece and then it's gonna work, it'll be fine. And I jumped out, I sent it anyways, and instead of disconnecting it properly, I kind of just took the whole thing off, and then my pilot chute came out for the board and it kind of ripped the pilot chute off the board and I kind of put me in a line twist. And but hey, I got out of the line twist, I landed with the board just fine and everything went great. And so everything that pretty much went wrong during sky surfing has went wrong on the first jump.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny.
I haven't had any spinouts.
It's funny too, because looking back at all the old footage, especially of guys like Troy, they made it look so fucking easy.
And that's why I hate it so much. I watch their videos. I'm just like, God damn, like all their exits look so flawless and perfect. And I still have yet to nail an exit. I'm like, that's the hardest part about the sky surf so far is the damn exits.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one of the things that I think Mary and I were so lucky because we had that tunnel to work with as well, that literally the first time she and I ever exited together out of a Twin Otter, it was as smooth as could be. So we were kind of the exception, but I've watched tumbles and twists, and it, even the act of landing with the board still on their feet, sliding in and then stepping out of the bindings like it's nothing, is just, it's not that fucking easy.
Yeah, definitely not. I've called tunnels and said, hey, can I fly my board in your tunnel? I've literally been hung up on. They're like, click.
Yeah.
Like, no, you're crazy. I've heard of one tunnel out in Eloy, and they said that they would potentially let me bring my board in the tunnel and learn over there, but I just got to be able to make it out over there.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and I mean, like the tunnel that we learned in Flyaway, first off, it was an underpowered tunnel, so the potential for fuck-ups weren't quite as dramatic, and all the walls are padded. So you're not doing any damage. You're not slamming a board into a glass wall, you know, or a concrete wall. You know, you're hitting a padded wall. So the potential for disaster was much less in that Vegas tunnel than it is now. So I can imagine that they're definitely hesitant when it comes to, you know, putting a piece of wood flying around in their tunnel.
Yeah, definitely. But if we can bring back Sammy Vasil's contraption that he had built for his tunnel, I'll get in that little rope thing and wear that thing and go in the tunnel. I don't care.
Man, I'll tell you what. I was there for all of that. The tumbling harness that he had put over the Airstream, and he made it work. I mean, the guy was a genius at working with not enough air to get done what he wanted done. But I've been in that ring trying to fly in the tunnel, and fuck me, even without a board. Holy shit, that was hard. It was a gymnastics ring that, of course, people would use to train to do big tumbling routines in gymnastics that we literally had suspended over the center of the air column in the Vegas tunnel, and that Sammy came up with and designed and built. And I think he was still pretty much the only one that could fly that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just incredible to what you guys did back in the day.
You've seen the history, man. If you know about that ring and all that shit, you've definitely done your research.
Yeah, I mean, I had to. There's nothing out there. There's no books on it. There's nobody talking about it. So I dove deep into the internet and found what I needed to find to get to where I am now. And it's incredible to where I started out, thinking from my first jump in AFF, my first tandem, to flying intermediate board sky surfing is just crazy to even think about. Like, well, I don't think anyone's even...
And if you've only got 3 years in the sport and only two actively jumping, that's not a lot of time to be taking on something like sky surfing.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But
there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people that will say only a dude that's been in the sport 3 years will think he can do this shit. But that's kind of what it takes, right?
Yeah, it really does take confidence and just being able to, you know what? Having confidence in your belly skill is enough to be able to, I can get stable on my belly and check this board and hold it down if I need to and pull on my belly if everything goes to shit.
Sure. Well, and
so,
I mean, also there's something to be said for not knowing you shouldn't be able to do something. Just go and no, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to be able to do that. So I just went and fucking did it.
Yeah, that kind of happened. I got in trouble in the tunnel once for doing a backflip, and they were like, don't do that. You're going to kill yourself. Yeah. Like, you're not supposed to be doing that. I was like, I didn't know. You didn't tell me I couldn't do a backflip.
Yeah. Well, where in the back of their minds, they're thinking, don't do that. But fuck, you just did a decent backflip.
God damn it.
So outside of sky surfing, are there other things in skydiving specifically that you're looking towards or down the road of the other achievements you're looking to make in the sport?
Not at the moment. Like, sky surfing is such a long journey, and I see myself trying to perfect this one craft in skydiving for a very long time, because I know it's not a short road and it's not an easy road at all by any means.
Sure.
It's going to take a lot of work, a lot of practice, a lot more dedication, and a lot more mental strength to keep going with it.
Sure.
But it's starting to get easier. The more I do it, people are becoming more accepting. People are like, you're finally doing it. And I am, accomplishing what I need to accomplish to be able to do it. So
sure. Now, as you move on down the road, is the manual that you're kind of a part of, is that something that's going to be made available to the general public?
Yes, absolutely. So he's going to start making copies. He's trying to get it approved by the USPA as a legit USPA skysurfing manual. So that's being approved as we're speaking. And the inline manual is starting to be created now. There's an outline of things that are happening. Sorry if there's noise in the background. We got
fans okay.
in the background watching the video.
That's okay.
So, yeah. And as I'm going through the inline on the intermediate progression, we are going back and forth on what could be added to the manual, which is necessary, taking pictures. So a lot of my pictures and videos that I'm taking with the board are going in the manuals. So people can actually see the different types of positions that you're supposed to be in, how to pull, how to stand up on the board, what's a recovery position, and these types of things, because a lot of this information has not been passed down and it's starting to be written down so we can pass it down.
Sure. I mean, I would think that the biggest thing, especially from a drop zone point of view, to make sure is being covered are the safety aspects, the EPs. You know, I mean, making sure that there are emergency procedures for the board and all of that. Now, of course, for anybody that doesn't know skysurfing or doesn't know the board, these boards have a cutaway system, which means if you're proper fucked, you can actually get rid of the board.
Exactly.
The board that you're flying does come with the safety chute attached, though, does it not?
Sometimes. Depends if your drop zone is requiring it or not. It's really not necessary, especially on the short board. I had one put on because that's one of the requirements that my drop zone initially put on the board for me. They were like, you need to have a recovery chute. But as you go through the progression and you know you're not going to cut away the board, it no longer becomes necessary, because then it actually becomes a hazard. Because you go into the centripetal spins and the pilot chute could open up and then rip one of your legs off. Who knows? I mean, what could happen?
Sure. Well, and I'd imagine that, again, as you continue to do this, that's the awareness that everybody gets, right? I mean, because the operations haven't dealt with skysurfing for a very long time as well, so they kind of need to be re-educated, I would imagine.
Yes, absolutely. The DZ managers, like, I'm basically the one trying to help inform them and bring skysurfing back alive and showing them the right way to do it, the wrong way, and how we should be doing it, going about it properly, and making it safe so people can do it and enter the sport of skysurfing safely and stay safe. Nice. And not injuring themselves. And so 45 jumps on the board, I'm doing pretty good. I have not hurt myself, haven't been in any spin outs, never had to cut away the board, never had to go to my second parachute. So TV's manual has really kept me safe and doing a good job of explaining what I should and should not be doing.
Nice. Nice, dude. That's awesome. Now, as we get towards the end, let me know a few different things. As we're waiting for TB's manual to come out, where should people be looking for announcements that something like that is available when that happens? Where can people get information on the boards themselves and where they might be able to get equipment, beginner, intermediate, all that kind of stuff? And then you yourself, if they want to reach out, talk to you, shoot some questions your way, or even offer advice because they were flying a board back in the day, how do they reach you?
Well, you can contact me on my Instagram. I'm sunsurfer01. And you can also contact Kibi. His Instagram handle is humanairframe. So he can send you a manual if you're interested. Just contact him. He'll send you a manual. You can contact him for building you a board, and he can help talk you through it. And it's really not that hard to get into, especially if you know how to contact the right people. And Kibi is the guy. If you want to get into skysurfing, he will get you into it.
Well, and I'm imagining now at this point, the one thing you can give people tips on is how to approach and work with your drop zone to make it acceptable where you're jumping.
Yes, absolutely. You just want to come at it in the right way and tell them you want to do it safely and that you have gotten coaching and you have the jump numbers. And there is like a progression. Like, you have to be able to do front layouts, back layouts. You have to be able to do a stand fly for the entirety of a skydive and send him in videos and prove that you are free fly capable to be able to even receive a beginner board. So it's not, he's not just going to send you a board just because you have 200 jobs. You have to show him that you're capable of handling the board as well.
Cool. Well, and that's good too. That's a great way to be able to approach drop zone management, is to show them the requirements that you're being held to, even to get a beginner's board.
Absolutely. People think, oh, you can just get a board and then go jump it. No, that's not the case. It's really, it's a lot harder. It's just like wingsuit. You have to take a wingsuit class in order to be able to start wingsuiting. Same thing. We're trying to do the same thing with sky surfing. We're trying to go about it the right way and show people that it's actually safer than people think it is. Nice. And trying to just change the popular opinion, because people think all those old sky surfers died. And I mean, some sky surfers did die, but it wasn't on a board. A lot of them died because of other accidents or parachute malfunctions, and none of them really ever had anything to do with the board.
Sure, sure. No, absolutely. Tom, I'll tell you what, man, I can't thank you enough for taking time off of standing down on loads to chit chat with me about this. I look forward to seeing your progression with it, and really hope that this goes where you're hoping it's going to go.
Me too. I appreciate you for having me on. It's an honor to be on here. I can't believe I'm actually talking to you and doing this right now. And it's been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, it's all about talking to people that are out there doing it, and especially people that are trying to, you know, kind of pave their own way. And that's exactly what you're doing. So thanks again.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Lunatic Fringe podcast, brought to you as always by, well, wait, not as always, actually. Brought to you now by Gyro. Formerly known as NZero Sports, you'll head to gyro.com for their next level line of canopies. By Pussfoot, the Extreme Sports Collective. Head over to pussfoot.com to check it out. By Summit Parachute Systems, check out summitparachutesystems.com to talk to Jarrett Martin and the gang about kick-ass pilot rigs, rigging courses, and more. By Flyaway Indoor Skydiving, go to flyawaytn.com and check out all the cutting-edge stuff to come. By Pure Spectrum CBD, head to purespectrumcbd.com to check out their wide range of CBD products. And as for us, head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com to listen to any of the hundreds of episodes currently available. Hit the link for our YouTube channel, pick up your copy of the Lunatic Fringe book or the Accidental Stripper, and get a sneak peek at upcoming guests. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. We'll be right back.